Senate Judiciary Committee, Wednesday, March 20th, 1991.
No.
We have everything we need? Got the amendments or we're waiting?
Oh, we have the amendments. There's the copies of the bonds that we...
Oh, okay. We'll get
the last time we asked.
Why don't you go ahead?
Hey, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Smith. I'm manager of the Debt Management Division of the Oregon State Treasury. Senate Bill 15 would serve to clarify to local government issuers the types of bonds and certificates of participation and other types of indebtedness that they must report to the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. As we spoke to the committee last week, we mentioned that the State Treasury staff is staffed to the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission. That commission, since 1975, has collected data and provides data on local government bond issuance. Senate Bill 15 is an effort to make sure that all local government issuers understand what they should be reporting to the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission.
And the amendments just sort of add a few things that you've obviously picked up along the way that you want to add that they report as well, right?
That's correct, Madam Chair. The amendments are really a result of the four statewide hearings that the Municipal Debt Advisory Commission undertook in November and December, and it became apparent at those hearings that such things as special assessment bonds and especially limited tax obligations, which we hadn't seen a lot of in the past in the state, will now become a fairly common type of issuance in the state, and therefore we wanted to make sure and spell out that that should be reported as well.
And you also have passed out the a sample of some committee members who met requested last time, at least in view of what is a conduit bond or an economic development bond. What we have is a revenue bond, IDRB, specifically dealing with the United States Bakery Project. How about that?
Madam Chair, that was in response to questions from the committee the last time to take a look at, in particular, on the front, what we've done here is copy the front page of an official statement, and the dark print towards the bottom of the page, I think, was the area of interest to several committee members with respect to the obligation of the state, actually the lack of obligation of the state with respect to repaying these bonds.
And the official statement is this other separate piece. Senator Springer is the one he's really talking about down here. Most of what anybody who's interested in buying bonds or investing does get this piece. It's a fairly detailed page with all the... It's the best Bible about what Oregon is all about. If you read an official statement, it is the current update of all the facts and figures. It's about 100 and some pages by now.
That's correct, Madam Chair. They get more extensive, and especially after a certain SEC... rules and regulations were implemented last year. They're more extensive still.
So, but this is the first page. If anybody's interested in buying an Oregon bond, you'd look at the official statement before you would the bond, probably, right?
That's correct, because you would not receive the bond till after they were purchased and settled. But you do receive the official statement before you make the decision to purchase.
Yeah. So, actually, this piece of paper is the more relevant of.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Schumacher.
I see that we have proposed amendments which would add limited tax obligations to the list of debts of the state that are defined as bonds. Maybe the witness could tell us what those are.
Well, okay. I think these are... This bill, these debt obligations are those that are issued at the local level that the state is asking to the local jurisdictions through its Municipal Debt Advisory Commission to collect information to ask all the local jurisdictions how many of these bonds, how many limited tax obligations, how many special assessments bonds do you issue in your local jurisdiction? So we're not expanding what isn't already authorized, but you need to respond to that.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct. What we're talking about here are local government bonds, and since the passage of ballot measure 5, we're going to see a number of limited tax obligation bonds, which would be obligations of the general fund of the local government. These bonds would be payable from any legal source, including taxes, up to the limitations imposed by ballot measure 5. An example might be a Bancroft bond, formerly was an unlimited tax obligation. Under ballot measure 5, without a vote of the people, Bancroft bonds would now be limited tax obligations because they fall under the limits, the $10 limits for ballot measure 5. And that's why they're now called limited tax obligations.
So it's a kind of a new animal.
Yes, it is.
Old animal. Old animal with a new name.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and this particular bill doesn't do anything different in terms of authorization. It's just
But I wanted to understand what we were including here.
Anything else? Any question? This bill is up for work session today as well, since it's one that we deleted before. So I would. Senator Hanby's moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 15 as requested by the State Treasurer's Office. Are there objections to that motion? Hearing none, so ordered. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Motion on the bill?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I will so move. Senator Shoemaker. Amended to the floor.
Senator Shoemaker moved Senate Bill 15 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Call the roll, please, Mark.
Senator Hanby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, members, for being here to move through the agenda. We appreciate that very much. Let's move. I'm going to ask Bill to change. I will move to the Senate Bill 376, which is the an update from Ingrid with respect to where we are on the contempt bill, because we I want to take action on Senate Bill 463 today, and we're going to need everyone here to understand what's being requested on that one. So let's move into Senate Bill 376, which is a contempt bill that Ingrid and the Judicial Department, everyone's been working on, and I think we're pretty close. We will not take action on this bill today. This is sort of report in. Ingrid will give us a synopsis of what we have before us, what the amendments are, and then we'll take action next week on this bill. There may be a few outstanding issues, but we're pretty close here. Okay, Ingrid.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have before you, and just being handed out at this time, our Dash 3 amendments, also the written testimony of Bill Linden, who is present here and is prepared to summarize for the committee what the amendments do. And then a hand-engrossed version of the bill, including the Dash 3 amendments.
I'd say, Bill, if you've got a few minutes, why don't we go ahead and do that? This is a very important bill. It does change the way the courts deal with the whole contempt issue or clarify it, and I think it's important. This is one of these bills that we're not going to sort of flop on people the last minute, so we're here to understand the amendments, and we'll take action next week. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Bill Linden, State Court Administrator, and I'll briefly explain the amendments that Council just referred to. Before I get into them, I want to note that we have continued to touch base with all the various interested groups, and I think that we've been able to do that pretty successfully. There's a couple of grammatical amendments that I won't get into. If you look at Section 5, page 2 of the bill, These amendments are intended to clarify that the new contempt procedures for remedial sanctions apply to contempt procedures for failure to pay fines or restitution, except where it's otherwise provided in statute. I don't remember exactly who raised this issue, but it definitely did need to be dealt with. I think the amendments make it clear that, again, the remedial sanction procedures apply in the failure to pay fines or restitution area. If you then go to Section 5 and look at lines 41 and 42 on the engrossed version, this is a amendment that was requested by the district attorneys, a provision to allow alternative service or an arrest warrant where the plaintiff is unable to serve the defendant personally. ORS Chapter 33, the contempt statute, currently allows an arrest warrant. And we have no problem with this amendment. I think that it makes some sense. Moving to page 3 of the bill, starting at line 3, the criminal defense lawyers requested that amendments be proposed that would delete the provisions that limited the right to appointed counsel in proceedings where a remedial sanction of 30 days or less was sought. And that's what these amendments do. They provide there is a right to counsel in those situations. It's essentially the same right to counsel as a defendant facing remedial, for a defendant facing remedial confinement, as would be given a defendant facing punitive confinement. So I think what it does essentially is that there would be no confinement under these contempt proceedings mm-hmm. without the right to appointed counsel. Again, that was that was requested by the criminal defense lawyers. Page 3, line 19, we have an amendment that gives the Supreme Court in its rulemaking authority under this bill the ability to adopt rules that make certain contempt proceedings subject to the ORCP where it makes sense to do that. In looking at this issue, and the district attorneys wanted some clarification on the application of ORCP, the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure. It didn't make sense to either say you can't ever use ORCP in these proceedings or you always have to. So this would give the Supreme Court, in defining through its rulemaking authority procedures and forms in the contempt area, the authority to use ORCP where it made sense. And if this bill becomes law, we're going to go through a process of drafting rules that will involve the same interested parties that have been involved in the development of this particular measure. Moving to Section 6, page 3, another DA concern about whether judges might abuse the special prosecutor language in the contempt bill. This amendment provides that the court can appoint a special prosecutor only when the DA, the district attorney, the regular prosecutor, declines to prosecute and the court determines that other remedies would be ineffective. So it further limits the instances in which a court may appoint a special prosecutor. And the district attorneys and the family and juvenile law section of the bar were interested in this particular measure and are satisfied with this amendment in terms of how it limits that authority. The next major issue is Section 10, page 5 of the bill, lines 25 and 28. The criminal defense lawyers had requested mandatory rather than permissive recusal for judges. What we've agreed on is an aspirational standard.
There are a few things, Bill, that this committee is going to have to deal with along the way, too, but we appreciate your willingness to try.
Okay. We're going for an aspirational standard of should. some middle ground between shall and may.
Right.
We've tried it. A good policy issue for the committee to take up. Section 11 deals with appeals, and the Practice and Procedure Committee of the bar had raised some issues there. These amendments basically provide that the court has to enter a judgment of contempt in order to impose sanctions, and that the judgment must be appealed within the time limits for appealing other judgments. It seemed to be the most easily applied standard. Now, I want to note we have just today talked with Chief Judge Joseph about the appellate provisions, and for the work session on the 25th, I think I'm going to have a few minor amendments to the appellate on the appellate issues based on my discussions with Judge Joseph. Section 12, the amendments change the commencement date of a remedial proceeding from the civil action standard, that being the date the action is filed and served, to a standard more similar to the criminal process when a warrant or process is issued. This was at the DA's request, and I think it's fine. Section 21 of the bill, there's a request from the district attorneys to amend the bill to allow a reasonable attorney fee when the DA initiates or prosecutes a contempt proceeding to enforce a support order. The DA has also raised a concern about a provision on page 9 of the bill. They thought it perhaps ought to be amended to provide that a certified record from the Department of Human Resources on a support payment could be substituted for the affidavit required in Section 5. I think we all now agree that Section 5 already allows for this substitution, so we don't need a particular amendment. Those are the highlights of the amendments. Like I say, we'll have a few additional ones dealing with the appellate process, but I think with the exception of some of these agreed upon issues that the committee will need to take a look at, that we're very close to consensus, although I think there are some additional issues that have been raised by Attorney David Lowry that you're going to hear about today.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you've gone this far and also acknowledge the fact there's some of these issues that it's unfair to ask you in a working group or those out there to make. They are clearly policy issues that this legislature's got to make, and we'll try to do that. But the fact that you've narrowed that down so we can make some sense out of it really is.
I think, Madam Chair, on the issue of recusal, everyone has the expectation that the committee would want to visit that one and decide what it thinks is best. Should was just an easy way to get it framed for you.
Okay, anything else that you'd like to share? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Get back to it for next week. And I would urge committee members to read this over, do whatever checking you need to do with checking with people. Is Lowry counting on being here today? Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Ingrid. Okay, let's move on then to put that one in your reading file, folks. Mm-hmm. And we will be prepared to take action, hopefully, next time we bring it before us. Dates for next week. And you have a communication yourself in your files from a David Lowry, who will be here during work session. Again, further some comments. Okay, let's move to Senate Bill 463. Is it okay there comes on up?
Madam Chair, they're all out in the hallway. They need to be called in.
Maybe they're not ready yet?
Well, I think what they're going to do is ask that the bill be put over. Mr. Kaufman, who's with the Clackamas County Clerk, and Frank Bronner are discussing some issues over their differences, and I think they may need some more time. But I think
okay. Well, let us then switch another switch and move to Senator Hanby. We want to move to Senate Bill 507. Then she has people who are here who want to come and talk to us about 507, and then we'll kind of get into some of this. Senator Hanby.
Yes, I won't take the stand, Madam.
507.
Sure. Conrad Hutterly is in the audience, a constituent of mine who initially proposed the idea behind the printed bill, but I call the committee's attention to 507-1, which is a revision of the quite short original printed bill. And in reality, the original 507 was not the intention of the requester, and so we have revised draft.
It may probably make us be able to move it a little easier.
Yes, yes. Mr. Hutterly.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I have copies of the proposed amendments. Do you have them in front of you?
We have 507-2. Is that what you have there?
I'm not exactly sure. I must apologize. I'm a rookie at this. I have...
First of all, you need to give your name for the record. So
okay,
we can
fine.
Get it on.
My name is Conrad Hutterly.
Right.
I'm an attorney admitted to the Oregon State Bar in 1983. I'm appearing on behalf of myself and not on behalf of any client or any other group.
Mr. Hutterly's amendments are dash one.
Okay, so here we come with dash one. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. I am a member of the Family Law Section of the Oregon State Bar and the editor of the Family and Juvenile Law Newsletter. I practice primarily in Washington County, and a large part of my practice involves family law matters. And I would support the adoption of the amendments that are being passed out to you to Senate Bill 507. Senate Bill 507 arises out of a situation where there is a judgment and a decree of dissolution entered which provides for child or spousal support. After this judgment has been entered, a party suspects that there has been a change in the other party's economic situation. They go to see an attorney, like me. And the attorney naturally asks what the other party's income is. They don't know. The other party won't tell. And you can't force the other party to tell unless you commence a modification proceeding. The Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure regarding discovery apply only when the modification proceeding has been commenced. There's a good reason for that. People have a right to be left alone. A person shouldn't be required to submit to a deposition or to produce all of his or her records without some substantial reason. And yet, without some basic information from the other party, you really can't tell whether a modification makes sense. So you have the crazy situation where I have found myself in on occasion where we've been forced to bring an action because we suspect that something is going on, and there seems to be some tangential evidence to suggest that the person's economic situation is improved, but we really don't know, and we're there to find out, which is a situation that the parties I'm involved with, that I've represented, would like to avoid if they could. And Senate Bill 507 is amended, is intended to remedy the situation, respecting the rights of the parties to be substantially left alone without due reason, and without denying the other party information that they need to know what their situation is.
I'm going to interrupt you and direct you to your dash one amendments.
Okay.
And tell me where the amendments would allow me to be left alone within good reason.
Okay, there are limitations. There are limitations on what you can ask for, and those are set out in subsection 2.
Right.
There are limitations on how often you can make this request. And the limitation is, as set out here, is once during a calendar year.
And you have to have an active spousal. Go back into any old divorce which has become final and do this?
Well, there are certain things, like there are certain matters that in a divorce decree become final. Issues regards the division of property and other things like that. There are other issues that continue because of their very nature. They can change regards to child and spousal support. And essentially what you're asking for here is the right to ask him to produce a document verifying what the other party's current income is and how much they have made, during the calendar year.
Hmm. So 105, and 105 is spousal support. 135 is child support. Is that ORS 107, 105, and 135? Could you tell me what those are?
Okay, 107, 105, if my recollection is correct, is there's a statute that lays out all the things that a court can do in a divorce judgment, all the decisions that it
and Kate,
regarding the address.
Prevailing party attorney fees. Prevailing party attorney fees.
Okay. Actually, let's see. We have information from the hall. That says they want to try Senate Bill 463, and we've had it up before, and so let's call the people back in from the hall, and there's still disagreement, but we have Senate Bill 463 up for work session, folks. This allows the county clerk to try to resolve the issue of unreadable. Yes, the one that you know and love so much. So, Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill was last before the committee on February 25th, and as Senator said, it basically would allow the clerks not to accept illegible documents presented for recording, and also would absolve county clerks both personal and official capacity for any civil or criminal liability for recording a document containing text that is not legible. We have before us a dash one amendments and also an engrossed version of the bill. The dash one amendments are dated 3/12/91.
Could you, someone tell us, Bill, why don't you go through what they do?
Okay, sure, Senator.
Oh, it's a substitute piece, yeah.
Right. Looking at the engrossed version at the top, it says repealing ORS 205-325, and behind the engrossed version, you'll see a copy of ORS 205-325, which is a fee for preparing copies of illegible documents. It removes on lines 9 and 10 certain language and then substitutes subsections A, B, and C. I guess I would direct the committee to, or suggest the committee read it. Otherwise, I'll probably.
So this is, we're substituting a legible original document is one mm-hmm. way I know that. About that part. These are the options that the clerk mm-hmm. could have. Preparing a true copy of the illegible text by fixing it right there, I assume with the original mm-hmm. witness, and then providing some reference. We didn't ever get past the question of having to go back and get it re-notarized or have the other signee sort of acknowledge
it. Well, I think the one thing that we did get past is if you want to substitute something, it's attached to it, and so we haven't lost the original, which right. is important. So as I would understand it, in A, if you want to substitute something, that substitute has to have a signature. If you can't get the signature, then you have option B, which is to attach something to the document that has a signature, but you don't lose that first document then.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Springer.
Have the title people been involved in this, or?
Well, they've probably been involved in it for a year in this, but I, you know how it all happens. It all kind of right now down to the bottom line. I think we do need to call up John Kaufman and Frank Bronner, and we'll have one last go at this.
I know this is not easy, and we don't have much more time on it, but when we talk about the clerk may, I guess we got 36 different counties, and I don't know how many people work at the different counters, and now we give them four different options or three different options. If I returned to do a search on a regular basis, and I had 36 different counties times X number of people at the desk that may decide which of the three options they're going to do, I wonder if this is going to make things easier or less easy for people who have to do this work day in and day out. Maybe one of the witnesses can address that question.
Hey, John, let's give us your pitch, and we'll do Frank as quickly as possible, and then the committee will make a decision in the next 5 minutes probably here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Springer, I believe the amendments that we've had drafted since the public hearing would give the options to the person recording the document. My staff would simply be saying to the person coming in to record, this is illegible. Here are some options that you have in order to present the document for recording.
Okay.
For the I understand your comment.
Yeah, I think I misstated four options. There are only three. And I, okay, the problem isn't any different for the person that may, whose job it may be to go through and try to examine the accuracy of easements or liens or any other transaction affecting real property that may be an encumbrance or otherwise.
What happens now, John? You reject it?
What happens now, we would say to them, basically, yes, we would reject it. They'd have to come back with, under the current language, a legible original document.
So they'd have to go away and come back with something that you could, your clerks at the front line are still making a determination whether they can read it or not.
Yes, Madam Chairman, and other determinations too, whether the legal description is for Clackamas County, if it's recorded in Clackamas County, if the signature is notarized, if the notary used his or her seal. There are still things that my recorder must do at the counter when a document is presented.
Senator Schumacher?
Madam Chair, if I read the present language correctly, there's still an option, either substitute a legible original document or prepare, direct the county clerk to prepare a true copy of the original document and attach it to the original.
Madam Chair, Senator Schumacher, that is correct.
So what we're really adding here is a third option, which is a reference to some other place in the public records where what you need to read can be found.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Bronner, why? We're adding another third option. We still don't include clerks from rejecting whatever you bring in. Tell us what you still don't like about this bill.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. We believed as we listened last time and as we had talked to the county clerks that their main concern was the indemnity or the removing liability, and we're prepared to agree to that, and I presented you with an OBA drafted amendment. There's no motivation for us to present an illegible document. We have every responsibility to have legibility. But sometimes there's a smudge on page 84 of an 85-page document. It's my understanding that county clerks do, in fact, accept illegible documents today. As a matter of fact, 205.325, which is suggested to be repealed, is the charge that they charge for an illegible document. Many county clerks today stamp their documents illegible and proceed with recordation. Now, the problem we have is there is no standardization as to equipment county to county. There's no standardization as to the process used, and there's no standardization actually to the expertise of the people running the equipment. Now, we're dealing with priority here, as you know, and that is far more critical than the entire document being legible. We would agree and try it in the hallway to agree to having the county clerk go ahead with recordation, stamp the individual pages or page that is illegible, that it is illegible, stamp the face of the document that page number 34 is illegible. Let us then see if we can replace that document with a legible document, but we may not have that opportunity. There may not be any way to correct the situation, but we're dealing with the priority, which is far more important than legibility. We're concerned about what happens when part of the document is legible and part is not. Do we throw out the entire document and start over? We've tried to find compromise. We think that there is no problem in removing the county clerk's responsibility as far as liability, but we think we ought to go ahead and record what we have in our hands.
Okay. Committee members?
Madam Chair. My question is, and I think it comes back to Senator Springer's question earlier, is the language stating that the clerk may, and then the clerk has the three options, or that the person bringing the information in has the three options? because if the individual bringing the information in to be reported has the three options, then I think they have the ability to protect themselves much better than the clerk saying you do this one and they're not comfortable with the option given. As I read it, the clerk could say you do A, but you can't do B or C, or you do C, but you can't do A or B. I'm not sure that I read it correctly.
Well, you want to respond as to the intent, and I think then I'd ask Bill to check us.
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, the way I would read it, I believe that the person presenting the document for record would have the three options. As I read it, the county clerk may require the person presenting it for record two, A, B, or C. And it would certainly be my intent to say it's up to you to decide how to do it. I wouldn't tell you it's this way or that way.
Sure. We're going to put the or in a different place, or is it clear?
Madam Chair, there should be an or after A if that's A, if that's the way it's supposed to read.
Even that, Madam Chair, I don't think even that does it. It still isn't clear who makes those decisions, as I read it, and I think it is ambiguous, and we ought to clarify it.
Bill?
Maybe this would do it. The county clerk may require the person presenting it for record to do one of the following. Well, that may
I
still
do it either.
All right. I think we can do it between now and...
Okay, well, I guess that's the question. Let's make a decision whether the committee is interested in supporting the bill with the clarification that the person who was bringing it in has any of the three options set down here.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Mr. Bronner if in fact his concern, if you had the ability to handwrite the part was that was, if you have 85 pages and one page has a smudge, as I read the bill, you could go through and write out that part and have it attached. Would that meet your needs?
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, the county clerk says go over in the corner and write that page, or go back the 100 miles, and I'm being facetious, go back the 10 miles and write the page and bring it back to us. Our concern is still priority. It's 10 minutes to 4, and they close at 4. I think there ought to be a way to work this out so we record and observe the priority, and then if we have the capacity to exercise one of these options, we would be able to. But it would be after the date stamp is on the document.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bunn.
I would think that the OBA amendments at least meet half the need of the clerks and that it's better to give them that half and get the bill on its way. Because I don't think we're going to resolve the other controversy today.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.
Maybe Frank could explain the OBA amendment to me. As I read it, takes out all reference to any means of and just says it doesn't resolve the problem at all. It just simply says that the county clerk can go ahead and record without any liability.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, that's out of the Bronner typewriter at 11:30, and it was just to handle the liability question. It had nothing to do with legibility. We are prepared and proposed in the hallway to have the county clerk stamp the documents. And I think that is, the language would read something like, the county clerk may stamp the individual page of a document illegible, as long as the face of the document is also stamped, illegible on pages, and then the numbers. And then if the person asking for recordation wants to replace or re-record more legible documents, if they have that available to them, they could do so. But the point of it is the priority would be protected.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bunn, and then I want to hear a response from Kaufman, and then we'll see where we are. I appreciate the fact you have a motion to...
Okay, well, it was a question to Mr. Kaufman. That is, if, forget whose amendments, we just take the original bill and say Section 1 we're not going to change. Basically, we remove Section 1 and leave Section 2 as it's originally worded. Does that give you a considerable part? Is that a major part, or was that a minor part of what you wanted to accomplish with the original bill?
Madam Chair, Senator Bunn, that was really a minor part. We would certainly accept that as an alternative to not amend Section 1 of present 205-135, or actually Chapter 205, Section 135 isn't numbered, but leave paragraph 1 and add paragraph 2 as originally proposed. That would be fine with the clerks. One proposal you might consider when you're looking at the idea of having the three alternatives, you could add some words to line 7, where the clerk may require the person presenting it for record to choose one of the following alternatives.
Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Shoemaker.
Frank, wouldn't this get at your concern if we were to add an additional subsection that in effect would say that when such a document is prevented from recording, the clerk shall mark it, as you've indicated, record it, and then may require that the recording party do one of these three things? Doesn't that clean it up?
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, yes, we'd accept that. We want to be able to record even if there is some difficulty with legibility.
And you have no problem with fixing the problem. It's just that you want to get yourself on record. You've got time problems.
That's correct. And I will tell you that my people have told me very emphatically this morning that if all of the equipment in all of the county clerk's offices was the same and had the same clarity, we'd have no problem.
I wonder if the county clerks have a problem with that.
Mr. Bronner's comment? No.
No, not suggestion that you go ahead and record. Note that there's an imperfect document, but there would be a requirement then that the recording party correct it in one of these three ways.
Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, I spoke out in the hall on telephone to some of the other clerks, and it was specific action of the Oregon Association of County Clerks to propose the bill as we originally did and then amended as we have proposed. We did discuss in our association the concept of marking a bill or marking a document as being illegible. But as an association, we rejected that concept, and we would prefer to stick with the original concept and as we've proposed to amend it. And Senator Bunn's proposal, I think, would be the best fallback for the clerks.
Senator Bunn's second proposal.
Second.
He's already sort of moved the amendment by the OBA. Assuming what you're saying is the Section 1 unamended Sub 1 and then with the addition of the Sub 2 as you have recommended. So I guess that's I'll leave that up to Senator Bunn to decide which motion he's wanting to make right now.
Well, I would move then that we leave Section 1 as it is presently in statute and add Section 2 as printed in the original version of the bill.
Okay. You've heard Senator Bunn's motion. Discussion of his motion.
How does that compare with what Senator Shoemaker just said? I kind of like what Senator Shoemaker said.
Okay, well, the sponsors of the bill rejected what Senator Shoemaker said, so I guess I'll take them on their behalf. At least I thought they did.
I think that's kind of what he said.
And so that's a discussion. The chair would not support that. I think we, you know, the sponsors have been working with an organization, and I think we have the two choices. We can try three choices if you want to. I'm happy to do that, but I want to give Senator Bunn the first opportunity here to make that motion, and if it fails, then we'll see where we are with the bill.
I would, Madam Chair, I'm curious whether or not the motion that I made deals with the question of whether or not things are going to be recorded. I guess it doesn't change anything, so one county may reject and another county may accept.
Right, it doesn't change anything. In terms of their recording or not recording.
But I'm not convinced that the OBA language does that either.
Okay, Senator Springer has a comment.
Well, this is a slightly different point on the Sub 2 new language on civil or criminal liability. John, did you testify earlier that you folks are getting sued or being held liable in court?
Madam Chair, Senator Springer, no, we've not had that experience.
Well,
it's potentially there, but
okay. Well, I think don't count me as an aye vote on this subject. I guess I'm kind of persuaded by Mr. Bronner's comments that maybe if the clerks could organize their recording, we wouldn't have the problem in the first place.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
If my proposal is not acceptable, then backing off to Senator Bunn's, I guess I don't understand how that is an improvement over the Dash 1 amendments. It just, what it does is simply remove as an alternative a reference to another document where the correct information appears. Right. That's the only thing that's being added to subsection 1. Are you suggesting that somehow in this conversation that's no longer appropriate?
Maybe I misunderstood the testimony, but I thought that there was a concern that we were creating a new criteria for rejecting, that we would reject until you came back with something different. And so I did not want to expand the process or the current opportunity for rejecting those. I think that the clerk should record whatever comes in and deal with the legibility question if we can, but put the date and time stamp on the information.
In other words, you kind of agree with my suggestion. We could do that, to go ahead and record the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then as a condition of recording, require that the person making the filing make the corrections promptly. And I suppose you could even put the document in a hold pile or something.
Okay, would you like to make that motion?
I'd love to, mm-hmm. if I would accept it.
Sure, I'll accept it.
All right. This, I move then that Senate Bill 463 be amended as follows, that a new subsection be provided that would require the clerk to record an illegible document, noting on the document the in what respect it is illegible, and that as a condition of that recording, the filer of the document would be required to then do one of the three corrections that are set forth in the Dash 1 amendment. And that I guess that's the end of the amendment.
No. Not necessarily. Shouldn't there be a time frame attached to that?
Yes, there should be. Say within 1 week, failing which the document would be stricken from the record.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Senator Shoemaker, you may need to get new signatures, and a week is I appreciate the sense of the amendment, and we would support it. I don't know whether the title companies are back in the room or not, but they had concerns previously.
Nodding heads.
You see heads back there?
Well, okay. I saw a nodding head, but I don't know if that's what she was nodding about.
I would suggest, I suppose, that if your amendment passes, you can always adjust the date on the final. This bill's going to come back in here as a final look with that kind of amendment. So I suppose you could always rearrange, make a last-minute amendment with respect to the time. Is there further discussion with respect to Senator Shoemaker's motion?
Madam Chair, besides the concern of how soon you have to have the amendments in or the clarification to meet the condition, also the reference, I wonder if there's any problem with referencing. So you look at one document and you know
he's
that...
He's listed three here. He's included that.
Okay, but if you provided... an illegible document, and it is recorded, date and time stamped. How do you know if you're looking at the record that you will find subsequent information a week later or a month later?
Well, yeah,
so
that's
the amendment. I'm just concerned that we make sure that it works.
Okay,
Madam Chair.
John, and then we're going to take a vote on this.
If I may, I believe our index would be pretty clear in showing that other documents are there. And I would say that with the amendments that you're proposing, that there would at some point, some fixed point, be a legible document on record, I think I could get the clerk's support.
Okay.
Senator Shoemaker?
The period of time runs from the time it is, the document is returned to the person asking for recordation. You see, there is a period of time that the county clerks have before they have to return the document. I'm just concerned about that week, and as
I would think
indicated,
that, that
from the time,
maybe this doesn't work, but it seems to me that the document ought to be returned right on the spot. If you have to take the document back, but I don't think you take the document back. You leave the document with the clerk. You then have a week from that moment, or whatever time we agree upon, to fix it.
They will not know, Senator Shoemaker, that it's illegible from a photographic standpoint until they photograph. And so the document is kept, and they go through the, I should let the expert tell me, but my understanding is they go through the process and then discover that it is illegible. It may look...
I'm going to stop. We've got people waiting on other bills, there is a Senator Shoemaker motion before the committee. Let's take a vote on the motion as advanced by Senator Shoemaker to amend further the bill.
And let me just
more
add,
discussion?
Madam Chair, that I would want to accommodate that point that was just made, and we can do that within the context.
Okay. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Bunn.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
No.
Chair Cohen.
No. Motion carried. Thank you. Okay. Let's move on to the major order of business here today. Is Judge Norblad still here? Do he have to leave?
He's still here.
Did we just amend this? Anything else to it?
My friend pled guilty, so I don't have to leave.
Okay, well, we're glad to see you. I just want to make sure that we get... okay, let's turn... Actually, we have one person signed up on Senate Bill 681, which who's come all the way from Bend, and I'd like to have that person, Pat Ross, come on 681, and then we'll take up 683 next.
Madam Chairman and Senators, my name is Pat Ross. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm here today representing the American Association of Retired Persons State Legislative Council. The subject of Senate Bill 681 was one issue of a number of issues that we had been concerned about and submitted for consideration for legislation. This issue... the recordation of power of attorney. The power of attorney is one of a number of private actions that a person can take short of formal court designation of a conservator, which is the subject of some of the other legislation. But the power of attorney is one thing that a person can do privately. Short of that, among their own family or relatives or friends. This bill would allow a power of attorney to be recorded by a county clerk, and if it is recorded, then would require that the revocation be by the same process. We feel that it would give more clout to a power of attorney, that it would make the power of attorney more acceptable in commercial transactions.
Okay, thank you very much. Questions, Senator Shoemaker?
Yeah, I have a couple. You do not. You provide that the power of attorney may be recorded. You don't provide that it shall be recorded.
That's correct.
Then the revocation, I assume that would, maybe we ought to add, if recorded.
We're not in a work session now.
Well, I know that, but I'm just asking. Because the way it reads, you say no power of attorney may be revoked unless the revocation is recorded. So you might have a situation where you have an unrecorded power, but you can't revoke it without recording the revocation. You didn't.
The intent was that if the power of attorney was recorded, then the revocation must also be recorded.
I think we can fix that. Another question. You might have a case where the holder of the power is running amok, as it were, and contrary to the interest of the principal, involving some transaction, the other party of the transaction is told by the principal that the holder of the power is acting contrary to his wishes. But there isn't time, or maybe it's just not feasible, to record a revocation. It seems to me it would be appropriate that if the party who is acting on, who is responding to the instructions of the holder of the power, knows that the principal revoked that power, has actual knowledge, that that also ought to be sufficient to block any action pursuant to the power.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, either recording or knowledge ought to be sufficient.
And following the knowledge, the recording of the revocation would take place.
Yeah, that's
perfect. And I would assume that if the agent were to take some action that was clearly contrary to the intentions of the principal, he would, in addition to probably other sanctions, he'd probably be liable for some criminal action as well.
I don't know whether he would be, but he'd certainly, there would be recourse